It's good to be with each other this morning. Marcus is here. Another visitor. More visitors. Visitors all over. We're excited for that. Empty pew. Come on up. Come on up. Okay. For me, this is fun. I don't know if it is for you. But, like we did with works and actions and meritorious works and meritorious actions and non-meritorious works and non-meritorious actions, we're going to do the same thing again with something else. That is, we're going to slow down and we're going to look at it. We have already discussed some of this. And frankly, last week I discussed some of it, but when I walked away from my presentation, I thought to myself, I think I can do better than that. If I don't do better than that, please don't tell me. No. Do tell me, because the job is to leave here more informed and better equipped than we walked in. And if I cannot convey my thoughts accurately, then I better sit down. Okay, having said all that wonderful stuff, what are we talking about here? Somebody tell me. Total hereditary depravity. Okay, so the T and the H and the D, total hereditary depravity. The T is part of a larger acronym. What is that larger acronym? TULIP. Okay, TULIP is a summary of a certain kind of doctrine, Calvinism. Named after, for? You're doing great. Which began roughly about when then?
400 or so. Constantine?
Okay. You went back to original sin. Okay. But Calvin lived when?
1500.
Yeah, 1500s, 1536 or so. And you said Constantine, I think you might have meant Augustine. Right. Constantine was the emperor. Augustine is the one who first came up with original sin. We'll talk about that some other time. All right. Excellent, excellent work. All right. But you're not done yet. Total hereditary depravity. Oh, that's nice. What does that mean? Okay, born in sin, that's great, but they could have said born in sin.
Because of your parents' sin is the hereditary part.
Okay, so we've got the hereditary part. You're born in sin, hereditary. Tell me about the sin, the depravity. Tell me about the depravity. Can't. Won't. Right. Can't or won't. Right? One of the two. Okay, so the depravity is essentially, depends. Now there are soft or moderate Calvinists, and then there are strong Calvinists, and in the strong Calvinists, there are extreme Calvinists, and there are the double predestination ones, and the single, and all that good stuff. Okay, so the depravity is unable to will to choose what is right. That's long, but unable to will to choose what you can't want to choose. Even if it's right there, you can't want to do it. Like the other day, we talked about there's a computer, you got a computer screen, and you want to print. And it says print, but you can't select it as many times as you want to. You can't select it, so you pound the computer. Same thing here. It's total in that you can't even believe. Even if you want to, you can't even believe. And it's inherited. Okay, very good. Romans 5, 12 through 21 is the biggest passage for the proponent of THD. And we're not going to read the whole thing. We're going to take this very incrementally. I hope it is beneficial. If you need clarification, look at me with one eye crossed or raise your hand. Of course, most of you do that anytime anyway. Look at... All right, so this guy, Thomas Schreiner, he is just a representative. He's in the ESV contributor. He's writing the commentary on verse on Romans. Paul clearly teaches original sin in verse 15. All people inherit a sinful nature because of Adam's sin. All right, there's one example. And Charles Hodge, he's long dead. The apostle's argument is direct proof of original sin. And the apostle in Romans verses 12 through 21 teaches this doctrine in the most formal and explicit manner. Here it is, baby. We're looking for it. Please tell me where this doctrine is taught. Charles Hodge and others say Romans 5, 12 through 21. Okay, but we happen to be there in class. All right. Before we go any further, finish this. We can all go home. If total hereditary depravity is true, We can all go home. Here's why. Walter Wessel, who writes for the New American Standard Study Bible, like the ESV Study Bible, but the New American Standard one, or the whoever the Zondervan fan, I forget who that is. Bethel Theological Seminary contributor. Okay, we do not start life even with the possibility of living it sinlessly. No possibility. And R.C. Sproul, we sin because we are sinners, born with a nature enslaved. There it is. We sin. We're not sinners because we sin. We sin because we're born that way. So, okay, we're born that way. Then, by the way, I have the THD and P. Tulip, what's P? Right, perseverance or preservation, exactly. Okay, so total hereditary depravity, there's nothing you can do, but once you are, so if there's nothing you can do, then what are we doing here? And once you are saved, there's nothing you can do to get unsaved, so what are we doing here? Either way, to be fair, R.C. Sproul, free will, the ability to choose, was lost through the fall. Okay, now, to be fair. To be fair, moderate Calvinists like Geisler, Norman Geisler, total depravity implies total inability. They deny that. That's the strong. That's what R.C. Sproul. You have total inability. Geisler comes along and he's a moderate Calvinist and he says, no, that's not true. In fact, he'll say that's illogical. It's fun to watch these two argue back and forth. There is no responsibility without the ability to respond. Are we responsible? Geisler reads his New Testament. He says, yes, we are. Well, that implies ability to respond. Geisler is great for being able to enunciate his position very clearly, even when he's wrong. Okay. So, to be fair, however, to be clear, even with the moderate, Geisler says, we are born sinners by nature. We do what naturally comes to us. We sin. So you end up with the soft or the moderate Calvinist or the hard Calvinist, the strong Calvinist, the extreme Calvinist. Doesn't matter what it is. You actually end up in the same place. We can all go home. Clear so far? All right. So, there are two levels when you're approaching these kinds of discussions with anybody. And the first level is, hey, is it true? For me, I want to know if it's true, because if it's true, then I need to follow it. No, it's not true. So, you don't have to worry about it other than if you want to be able to help somebody else. Here's somebody who's doubting, a Christian is doubting. Maybe this Calvinism is true. Well, you want to be able to help them. There's a Calvinist. They come up to you and they say, here's the truth. You want to be able to help them. So, in one level, we could skip this and go right back into our text in Romans chapter 5 and go into Romans chapter 6. But that wouldn't be fun. So, let's go into knowing your enemy. They believe that the death Paul speaks of is physical. Verse 12, Romans 5:12. Therefore, just as through one man sin entered the world and death through sin, so death spread to all because all sinned. Verse 13, for until the law, sin was in the world, but sin was not imputed where there is no law. Nevertheless, death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over those who sinned not in the likeness of the offense of Adam, who is a type of him to come. Okay. Walter Wessel, we looked at him before. Physical death is the penalty. That's what they're talking about. Physical death when they read this. All right. Furthermore, they believe there was no sin between Adam and Moses. No sin. Verse 13, for until the law was in the world, sin was in the world, but sin is not imputed where there is no law. Nevertheless, death reigned over Adam to Moses, even over those who had sinned not in the likeness. Okay, not sinned in the likeness. All right, here's their quote, Wessel on 13. In the period when there was no Mosaic law, sin was not charged against man. Not charged against man. To be fair, Schreiner, who writes for the ESV, or Schreiner, I don't know his name, sin was in the world before the Mosaic Law, so he differs a little bit here. But it technically was not reckoned as sin, so we end up in the same spot. Okay. Now, number five, they believe that death results from sin. Physical death is the penalty for sin. Let's expand this quote. I'm going to be bouncing between up here and up here now. Death is the penalty for sin. They believe that part. Okay. Let's go a little bit further. They believe that there was no sin between Adam and Moses, but people still died. In the period when there was no Mosaic law, sin was not charged, but death continued. All right? So the question is, where is the sin that killed these people between Adam and Moses? Where is the sin? Because remember, there was no law, there was no sin, but they still died. Death continued. Well, if sin is connected to death, and death is connected to sin, then where is the sin? There was no law. They couldn't sin, but yet they died. So they had to find sin somewhere, and so where do they find it? Adam's sin. To finish the quote, people between Adam and Moses were involved in the sin of someone else, namely Adam. There's your hereditary sin.
Things. If physical death is a penalty for sin, then nobody will be on the earth. We're all sinners.
Immediately, you mean?
Yeah.
Right.
And also.
But actually, to be fair, physical death is the penalty for sin.
That's right. That is a result. I mean, when Adam sinned.
Right.
You're
we will talk about 1 Corinthians 15, which 1 Corinthians 15 is talking about what we're just entered into a discussion of. But let's not confuse ourselves for now. Paul is only talking about spiritual sin here. And you'll see I keep on using the word here in a minute to come. We're going to refute all this. Go ahead.
Another thing I was going to say is there was no Mosaic law between Adam and Moses, but there was still law. Or else how would Noah know how he built the ark? How would Abraham know what to do? Everybody was told what to do.
Okay.
There was law, just not Mosaic law.
Okay. There was law, but not Mosaic law. We'll get into that. Valid point. Did you want to... Okay. You look like you're chomping at the bit. Okay. All right. So, we got to get that. Now, the phrase, Schreiner and everybody else says this, all sinned means that all sinned in Adam's sin, because he represented all who would descend from him. He had power of attorney from God, is an expression that is used. A little bit more. They believe, now this actually is in Romans 15, but I'm just being a little bit more thorough. They believe that when Adam sinned, his nature, namely his ability to will to choose the right, changed, and he was no longer able to will to choose what is right. Again, this isn't in Romans 5, but this is part of the deal, part of total hereditary depravity. They believe that Adam passed on to us this inability to will to choose what is right. In fact, we cannot even believe. So we have depravity, it is total, and it is inherited. Is this part of total hereditary depravity clear? This is only one part of TULIP, and it's only one part of that, and that's all we're going to talk about now.
Yep.
Gary, go ahead. Right. But the Holy Spirit regenerates you before you believe, according to the Calvinist, the hard Calvinist, not according to the soft, the moderate Calvinist, okay? And not according to the Bible. Right. Okay. And that all has to do with free will. Okay, some contextual corrections that we're going to deal with here. You're going to see there are two things wrong, which these two simple things that are wrong will totally change how we interpret the plan of salvation. Paul is not speaking of physical death here. All right, Paul is referring to spiritual death. Let's read it. Verse 12. Just as through one man sin entered the world, and death through sin, so death spread to all men because all sinned. I want to make a point from that, because all sinned, or for that, the King James or the New King James says, for that all sinned. Death spread to all for that because all sin. Here's the point. It is directly related to death, sin. Directly related. Anybody disagree with that? Because we can't go further. The death here is related to the sin. All right. So, to put it in a syllogism, if you will, if died, then sinned. If somebody's died, in this context, if somebody's died, then they have sinned. You see that? Okay, here we go. Jesus died. What is the forced conclusion? That he sinned. Did Jesus sin? No. So something is wrong with our premise. One of them. right? What is the problem? What are we not taking into account? First of all, not all death results from all sin. Only a certain kind of death results from all sin. Right? What death results from all sin? There's only one death that he's talking about here. Separation, spiritual. Right. Paul is not talking about physical death. He's talking about spiritual death. Is that, anybody have a question about that? Because we're done with this. There were 2 points they made, and 2 points that we're refuting here. This is one point. To me, it's pretty simple, but maybe it's not to somebody else. That doesn't mean I'm smart. It means I missed something.
But I mean, even from their point of view, how do they deal with people like Enoch?
He didn't die. I have no idea. I can't remember right now. I probably have read something, but I can't remember. Maybe it'll come to me at some important point later on. Okay. So, spiritual death here. Get that. Point number one. Now, point number two. Second contextual correction. Paul does not say there is no law, or was no law at all, between Adam and Moses. He doesn't say that. Let's read it again. Verse 12. Just as one man sinned, through one man sin entered into the world, death through sin, so death spread to all because all sin. For, this is connected, until the law, sin was in the world. But sin is not imputed where there is no law. Nevertheless, death reigned from Adam until Moses, even over those who had not sinned in the likeness of the offense of Adam, who is a type of him who is to come. All right, about this word, this sentence, the statement, sin is not imputed where there is no law. All right. This is, first of all, this is the obvious. This is not an explicit statement that there is no law or sin at all during this time. An explicit statement would sound something like this. There was no law or sin at all between Adam and Moses. They don't look the same. One's an explicit statement. The other one might imply it. But it doesn't necessarily imply it. That's point number two. Paul's statement does not necessarily imply that, in fact, in reality, there was no law between Adam and Moses. Let me give you an example. There is chaos where there are flying pigs. While I was writing this over and over, I thought of Eric. Eric, if you saw a flying pig, would there be chaos in your house? I think no. I just shot the whole argument out. No. Okay, so there would be in mine. Let me tell you. Maybe I should have thought of my children, right? So, there would be chaos. If there's a flying pig! Right. There's chaos where there's flying pigs. Does that mean there are flying pigs?
No.
No. Okay, let's compare this. This is more parallel. There is no chaos where there are no flying pigs. So there are no flying pigs. Does the statement prove that there are no flying pigs? No. Reality proves that there are no flying pigs. The statement doesn't do anything. The statement by itself implies nothing about reality. All right. So the statement by itself implies nothing about reality. And Noel, there has always been law. You ever hear of, as he pointed out, Noah, in how to build the ark? Oh, by the way, why was God destroying the world? Right. Everybody had not sinned. And God is evil and unfair. And so he decided to destroy everybody because it wasn't their fault to begin with. Obviously not, right? Romans chapter 1, and I won't even go over this with you. You guys know this is. I don't want to insult your intelligence any more than I already have. Not that I enjoy doing that. Paul's point actually is there was law. All right. Verse 12, all sin. That's the last statement. Now, he's actually making some completely different other point. But the last statement is, all sinned, and then he goes into parentheses for at least 4 or 5 verses all the way down to 18. All sinned, for, verse 13, directly connected. For, until the law, sin was in the world. And they would agree, by the way. Oh yes, those Gentiles, they're all spiritually dead. Remember, they need to become Jews. Why? Because they're spiritually dead. Well, how could they be spiritually dead without a law? All sinned. For until the law of Moses, by the way, the word, the article, the, is not in the original. It doesn't matter in the context, it makes sense. was in the world, but sin is not imputed where there is no law, right? But they did sin, so there must be a law. That is actually his point. Nevertheless, death reigned from Adam to Moses, and they'd agree, oh yes, all those Gentiles, oh bad. Even over those who had not sinned in the likeness of the offense of Adam, who is a type of him who is to come. Okay, so Paul's point is actually their sin implies law for them. All right, so because Paul is speaking of spiritual death, remember they said it's physical death. No, it's spiritual death. Because Paul is speaking of spiritual death, and he stated that they all have law, that's in chapter 1, chapter 2. And they're saying, no, they don't have law. Oh no, yes, they do have law. Okay, because they were wrong on these two things, guess what we don't have to look for? We don't have to look for sin in somebody else. They had a law. They themselves broke the law. We don't need to look for them sinning in Adam somehow. They broke the law that they had. They themselves directly and immediately broke the laws that they had. By the way, it says that sin, in verse 13, the New American Standard, your version might use a different word, but sin is not imputed where there is no law. But yet their argument is that the sin of Adam was imputed to us all, yet they say there was no law. Wait a minute. If there's no law, then the sin isn't imputed to us. Okay. A little bit more. Stop me here, because we're going to keep rolling. In fact, we can then take death spread to all men because all sinned at face value. Verse 12. Just as through one man sin entered the world, death through sin, so death spread to all men because all sinned. Now I'm going to throw up here a quote from last week. If you were paying attention, you caught this. Dr. Norman Geisler. Adam's sin affected not only himself but also all his offspring. All of us have sinned through one man. And when he does this little right here, this little part right here, what is that? It's a quote. Okay. All right, so he's quoting from Romans 5:12 right there. That those three letters, those three words, are a quote of Romans 5:12. But he says, all of us have sinned through one man. And if you're uninformed or reading very quickly, what do you take away from that statement that Mr. Geisler wrote? That we all sinned through Adam. Look at Romans 5:12. What is that what it says in Romans 5:12? Just as through one man, that's our part, okay, we're looking for, we sinned. Sin entered the world. Two totally different things. Bad form, Mr. Geisler. He's a genius when it comes to apologetics. Genius. But when it comes to polemics, Homer nodded. Yeah, what, I don't know what he's thinking. Several times. He just doesn't even, like Hebrews chapter on perseverance of the saints, Hebrews chapter 3, verse 12 and 13, I think it is. No comment. No comment whatsoever. Okay. So, further note, the connection, direct or indirect, is it direct or indirect? The connection, whether it's direct or indirect, between the agent and the effect is not explicitly stated in 15, 18, and 19. Verse 15. If, the middle of it, if by the transgression of the one many died. Okay, directly by the transgression of one or indirectly by the transgression of one? It doesn't say. Much more did the grace of God and the gift of by the grace of one man, Jesus Christ, abound to many. Oh, by the grace of one man, directly or indirectly? The same thing for verse 18. So then, as through one transgression there resulted directly or indirectly condemnation to all men, even so through one act of righteousness there resulted directly or indirectly justification of life to all men. By the way, what can be said of one can be said of the other, in which case, if Adam, if we take it right here, oh, it's direct, Adam killed us all, then what did Jesus do? Saved us all. All. Right. Whatever can be said. Now, of course, they'll say, no, you got to go somewhere else. Exactly the point. It doesn't say it right here. In fact, the only place it does say it in the context is in verse 12. In verse 12, because all sinned. Is that clear? Okay. I thought I saw a hand go up, maybe? Okay. All right, so that's total hereditary depravity from Romans chapter 5, verses 12 through 21. And I tell you what, I didn't see it in there. And this is their numero uno, that's number one for you guys who don't understand, passage. Number one passage right here, and it's not in there. So, now this is like dispensational premillennialism. There's a lot more to the argument. But every time we encounter one of their arguments, well, in reality, it's not really there. It would take a lot longer than 45 minutes to dispute TULIP or even total hereditary depravity by itself. But here's their big passage, and it's not there. So what does that say about the rest of the passages, like Psalm 51 and Ephesians 2 and other places? In fact, one of those other places is 1 Corinthians 15. Turn there. And this will just be for clear thinking. First Corinthians 15, verse 21. And you'll see the resemblance here, between here and Romans. For since by a man death came, by a man also came the resurrection of the dead. For, as in Adam all die, so also in Christ all will be made alive. Sounds exactly like Romans. There are some differences. And by the way, just really quickly, R.C. Sproul, on Genesis 3, the fall, in Romans, Paul affirms that all mankind is naturally under the guilt and power of sin, Romans 5 and 7:21. He traces this back to the sin of the one man, Adam, compare 1 Corinthians 15. So they take Romans 5 and 1 Corinthians 15 and say they're talking about the same thing. Let's look at that for a minute. Okay. The question in 1 Corinthians 15 is not whether or not you need to be a Jew to be saved. The question in 1 Corinthians 15 is, hey, they believe that there is no resurrection of the dead. Verse 12, if Christ has preached that he has been raised from the dead, how do some among you say there is no resurrection of the dead? That's the whole context. All right, resurrection of the dead. Verse 20. Christ has been raised from the dead. Here's the fact of the resurrection. Now, we could take nothing else previously and say, oh, that refutes what their assertion. They're saying there is no resurrection. He says, look at Christ. He was resurrected. Oh, okay. So there is a resurrection. But they have a little bit more of a struggle. Wait a minute. How does his resurrection apply to all of us? And what Paul will do is exactly what he did in Romans 5. He'll take Adam, one guy, and say, you understand about Adam. Let's talk about Adam for a minute. And I'll tell you, once we've made the applications about Adam, we'll apply that to Christ, and you'll see the parallel. Okay, so in verse 21. For, since by a man came death, by a man came the resurrection of the dead. In verse 21, he's talking about the agent of the resurrection. They understand that by a man came death. They understand that, Adam. What they need to get their mind around is by a man came the resurrection of all. Oh, okay, so I get it with Adam, and now I understand it with Christ too. Notice, here's the agent, here's the agent, here's the result, here's the result. Picture, if you will, Adam, with physical death, broke the glass floor. When he sinned, he brought physical death for us all. He did. That is the difference between spiritual sin, spiritual death, and physical death. When Adam sinned, he brought physical death for everybody, which is why Jesus died. Okay. Jesus, Adam broke the glass floor. Jesus breaks the glass ceiling. Adam was the first fruits of death. Jesus is the first fruits of life. All right. Verse 22 is the effect. Sounds like it is saying the same thing. Die. All in. Here's the position. Here's who. And here's the position. In Adam. Will be made alive. See, here's dying and here's being made alive. All in Christ. Here's the position. All right. That's what he's saying. That's the argument that's going on there. Now, as far as total hereditary depravity, stop me if this isn't making sense. If Adam became depraved only after he sinned, then why did he sin to begin with? Why did he will to choose what is wrong before he lost the ability to will to choose what is right? Deceived. Right. Yes. Then, what about Jesus? Jesus was human. So if it's inherited, why didn't Jesus get it? Ezekiel 18 says it's not through the Father. So it has to be through the Mother. Which is why the Catholic, who invented original sin many years ago, oh, in order to have original sin, you have to reason backwards. Well, what about Mary? Oh. And you have the Immaculate Conception. Right? So that's Catholicism thrown in there. If there's nothing I can do, we've talked about this before. This passage, if it teaches total hereditary depravity and original sin, it also teaches universalism. Verse 22, as in Adam all die, so also in Christ all will be made alive. We make the same argument again. Bear with me for another minute. This is the important part. This passage isn't even talking about sin. Not primarily. It doesn't really mention it. It implies it in Adam's death. But it doesn't actually talk about sin. It's talking about bodily death. It's not even it's limited to a discussion of bodily resurrection and bodily death. Jesus died and was resurrected, and he ran around and he showed himself to all these different people. Is that talking about a spiritual resurrection? No, they saw his body. Are we going to be resurrected? Yes, you will. With what kind of a body, Paul? It's talking about a physical resurrection. All right. The closest Paul comes to all sin because of Adam is Romans 5:18, and he clarifies himself in 5:12. Finally, for clear thinking. Oh, yes, good. Good, good.
Catholics,
I like to get far ahead.
Immaculate Conception. Is that the same root the Calvinists think?
No.
How do they get there? You might have said it, I missed it.
No, I didn't say it.
What do they do with the fact that Jesus did not sin? If the Catholics take it to, well, Mary was perfect too, so Jesus could not have inherited it. Yes, it presents problems, obviously. But what do the Calvinists do instead?
Oh, yes. Right. Okay, so transducianism.
I'm sorry, I asked already.
Yes. All right, so this brings on the question of when the being receives its depravity. Okay? And is the being... my wife has a little baby in her tummy right now. Was that baby depraved at the point of conception or a little bit later? It has to do with when the creation of the soul is. It's all very complicated. We'll talk about it some other time. But it has to do with when is the creation of the soul? Okay? Did God create an evil soul, or is it... that's the question. And Norm Geisler will say, oh no, he couldn't. But yet Charles Hodge will say, well, God created the soul. No, he didn't create it. And it's, oh, here's my quote. Oh, wait. This is beautiful. I didn't know I'd get to this. Whether we can refute those principles or not does not affect the truth of the doctrine.
What?
We might as well deny all prophecy and all providence because we cannot reconcile absolute control of free agents with their liberty, which is another point. But the point is this. It's illogical. And it doesn't have to be logical. And expect a lesson on that real soon. I have quote after quote after quote. This has been one of my funnest reads. The whole thing. Philip Schaff says of John Calvin, illogical. But Philip Schaff himself says, but don't really think about my position because, by the way, it's illogical too. Norman Geisler points at the hardcore Calvinist and says, illogical. Check your brain at the door. So there's your answer. There's your long answer. Okay?
That's facts. You don't need no stinking facts. I mean...
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Don't bother me with the facts. Because we can't, in fact, your friend, he said the same thing to me. And he used this analogy. Look, it doesn't have to be reasonable. Consider the Godhead. Three in one? That's unreasonable, isn't it? No, it's not.
No.
Three persons in one essence. It's not three of the same thing. But he tried. His argument was, it's unreasonable. Don't try to think of it as reasonable. Yeah, check your mind at the door. Okay. For clear thinking, Adam's sin brought two deaths, physical and spiritual. Physical, all people are impacted involuntarily. Physical death, Jesus died. He couldn't help it. You can't help it. Now, God can help it, but you can't. That's 1 Corinthians 15. However, spiritual death, any who die spiritually did it voluntarily. That's Romans chapter 5. Let me throw up this wonderful illustration. I love it. Okay, this is a big window. This is a big window with what we call divided lights. Okay? Now, here are a whole bunch of people. When that one big giant window breaks, where do all the people go? They fall down. Okay, so with physical death, 1 Corinthians chapter 15, when Adam broke the window, we all fell. But with spiritual death, Adam only broke the window pane that he was standing on. And Eve broke hers, and Lee broke his, and each of you broke yours when you sinned. Okay, that's the difference between physical death and spiritual death. It's a big difference that really you don't need to get in your mind other than to refute things like Calvinism, where they're a little bit confused and they say, oh no, this and this, and just all mixes in there together. Don't think about it. Please. By the way, who's behind don't think about it? Satan. Is he not effective? That's, I won't give it away. But I am amazed more and more at how effective Satan is. Okay, so there's total hereditary depravity and how it does not apply to Romans 5 and 1 Corinthians 15. Any questions about that? Next week we'll go back into Romans 6, back into the text. I do have a point or two if we don't fill up the...
So in total depravity, are they saying that if the child dies that has not become Christian, that they will go to hell?
Okay, so depends on which category of Calvinist you fall in. No, if a child dies, the infant who is depraved will go to hell. And there can be an entire nation's. And in reality, this actually is a little bit logical. Okay, God, I wouldn't teach this as fact. I'm not teaching this as fact. They speculate. All right, God can control two things about you. When you're born and where you're born. And when you die. About your birth, God can control where you're born and when you're born. Okay? So there are some places where the gospel just hasn't been forever. Now, I disagree with that. But let's assume that's true. Okay? But what God can do is he can take those whose souls are predisposed to believing the gospel and put them in places where the gospel will be more. He could do it. I'm not saying he does. That's their argument. I wouldn't go there because the rest of it is a bunch of hogwash. Make sense? I don't even want to speculate about it. Look, if anybody wants the gospel, God can get it to them. Who should want the gospel? Everybody. And that's where, you know, they say several times, Schaff and Geisler, and I haven't read it from Hodge or anybody else yet, but it's the theory. Everybody works off this theory, whether or not they make it explicit or not. They work off the theory of, here's what God revealed to us, here's what God can do, but we have to teach only what God has revealed to us. Which is true. God, when I get to heaven, there, I assume by his grace I get to heaven, there might be some people there that I really expected not to be there. However, that assumes the principle that I have to teach that this is, I have to teach statement, command, example, necessary inference. That's what I'm stuck with. But God, well, he's not bound to the same law as I am when it comes to his gospel. Yes, sir.
With the people that have not heard the gospel, wouldn't they fall underneath what you were just talking about? There is no law. And forget Moses, it's still going. They've never heard the gospel.
Well, but there is law for them. There are two laws for everybody. There are two laws now. This is a difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament. Okay. In the Old Testament, there were two laws. There was the general revelation, and then there was the specific revelation to the Jews. Now, the Jews had to follow the Old Testament, all of it, letter by letter. Everybody else didn't have to. They could if they wanted to. They could become a Jew if they wanted to, but they didn't have to follow that law, the specific law. They had to follow the generally revealed law. That's Romans chapter 1 and Romans chapter 2. However, sorry, just a moment. Now, whereas in the Old Testament there was one general law and one revealed law, and not everybody had to follow the revealed law, in the New Testament there is one general law and one revealed law, and everybody has to follow that revealed law. For example, who is the command to be baptized for? Christians or non-Christians? Non-Christians. The law of Christ, the specifically revealed New Testament law of Christ, is not only for Christians. Otherwise, don't tell them about it. But that's not what we see. The Great Commission is, go out into all the world and teach everybody, this is the law, you've got to follow it. Does that make sense? Maybe it doesn't. Whether or not you agree, does that make sense?
I'm still confused sometimes thinking about the grace period when Adam and Moses. There was a law. It did. I didn't know about anything else. So these people that are in the world now that have not heard the gospel, they've got to be still in this winter.
I'm not sure what I understand what you meant by there was a grace period between, I think you said Adam and Moses. I'm not sure who you said, but there was a grace period. Expound on that. Sorry?
There was no law from Adam to Moses.
Oh, but there was law. So, sorry?
I don't know.
Well, everybody knows it. Look in Romans chapter 1. No, okay, we have to be clear between specifically, explicitly revealed law, like the law of Moses, that's one kind, an explicit law, a posited law. And there's another kind, a generally implicit law. There is a creation, there must be a God, he has rules. Romans 1 talks about the first kind. Verse 18, the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the law of Moses. It doesn't say that, okay? It says the truth. Okay, what truth are you talking about? Okay, verse 19. Because that which is known about God is evident within them. Not in the law of Moses, although it is in the law of Moses, but this says within them. For God made it evident to them. God has put in every single person that has ever been, there is a moral law that we all, it's called our, well, it's a, there's a moral law. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power, his divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, not through the law of Moses, but through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. The excuse there implies that they are in judgment. Even though they didn't have the law of Moses, there was law that they are, that some of them, all of them, have broken. Chapter 2, verse 12, real quickly. All who have sinned without the law also perish. How can you sin without any law? You can't sin when there's no law. So this isn't saying there was no law. This is saying there was a law. It wasn't the law of Moses, but they sinned without the law of Moses. Oh, that implies that they had their own law, which is what we read in chapter 5, until the law, verse 13, sin was in the world, but sin is not imputed where there is no law. The point being, if they sinned, it implies that there was a law. Whew, that was a lot. But here's explicit law. Law of Moses. That's for the Jews. And then there's implicit law, which all people, Jews and Gentiles, nowadays, Jews and Gentiles or whoever, all of us have born within us a law. Now, nowadays, back then, let me just go on for a second. Back then, those who were not born with the law of Moses, so a Gentile back then, the person in the African jungle, okay, they have a law. It's a generally revealed law. Creation. God has given us some things in our minds and in our hearts. You need to do these. For example, don't punch me in the face. Everybody knows don't punch me in the face. When I punch you in the face, guess what I've done? Law of Moses or not? I've broken God's law. And everybody knows, don't punch me in the face. Nowadays, what we have is, and it's the same back then, but now it's a little different. Nowadays, we understand from creation, there's a God. And anybody who is reasonable, what's the next question they ask? Where is he? What does he want of me? And as long as you start going down that path, what does he want with me? And those who will really, really are seeking to know him, Acts 17, if you seek him, in other passages, if you seek him, what will he do? He will let you find him. So they have to come to the law of Christ. Anybody else? Right.
You have Moses.
Right.
I mean, you can go on and on and on. You have these people that walked righteously before God. How do they know to walk righteously if there was a law?
Right.
There was a law.
Right. You know. They didn't have the law of Moses, but they had their own law.
Right. Even when the law of Moses was given, that's not to say that there wasn't law somewhere else, because you have Balaam.
Right.
Who was Balaam preaching?
Right. Melchizedek.
Jews.
Right.
So.
Jonah goes to Nineveh and says to them, follow the law. He doesn't use that language, but that's what's implied. He says to Nineveh, repent, which implies a law. Now, it's not the law of Moses. It's contemporary with the law of Moses. So people think, Adam, let me do it over here. Let me get a blank screen if I can. What do I need to do? I don't know what I need to do. I need to go out of that. No. Okay. Okay. People think, here's Adam. Here is the time of the patriarchs. And then here's the law of Moses. And then here's Christ. And we have those laws. And since there's a law of Christ here and a law of Moses there, there's no law here. But in reality, that's not what it is. The law of Moses, we have it in a straight line here, but it actually should be over here. Because for everybody, there has always been this law. Everybody, there's been a morally inherent to yourself law. The law of Moses is actually aside for just the Jews. And if you wanted to become a Jew, you could be. But if you didn't, you still have this law. And this law still exists, this law of general revelation, and now we all have the law of Christ there. We should break. We can continue this conversation this week or next week or the month after. Thank you for your work. We'll break till 5 after.